Brian, thank you very much. Just on the so-called champagne party in the Department of Foreign Affairs, a listener says, this is pathetic. It was a small celebration for a success for the country. It's painful to listen to this. But I suppose we know now that it merits an investigation within the department. That's what we're told by the minister. Another one, at the very least, these questions need to be addressed before a Dáil committee. 51551 for your messages. Coming in too on solar panels, Kate says, I used to put appliances on at night and then for safety I was told not to do that because we were hearing about saving energy and putting your appliances on at night earlier. And we always get that point. And I know that if you're talking to any fire safety officers, they absolutely warn against using your appliances at night. I'm not quite sure what the right answer is, Kate, but thank you for raising that point. And this one, which is totally on the money, it says you need a lot of money to get your house fully retrofitted. It's not realistic for most families in Ireland. I would love to do it someday, but it remains a dream. I'm joined now by Dr. David Nabarro, COVID-19 Special Envoy with the World Health Organization. Good morning to you, David, and thank you for joining us again on
Good
the programme.
Yeah.
You were had an interview in the Business Post yesterday here in Ireland, and you said in that interview that the spread of Omicron variant could signal the first phase of COVID-19 becoming a common cold. Will you explain to us what that might look like, what you're expecting to happen?
Thank you. Viruses, when they arrive in the human population, are often quite ferocious. But in the succeeding months and years after their arrival, typically they go in one of two directions. The first direction is that they just die out. They basically lead to the death of those who they infect, and then there is no way in which the virus can continue to stay alive because it's killed so many of the people who are affected by it. But on the other hand, other viruses over time become milder. They not only don't kill the people that they infect, in fact, they actually lead to virtually no disturbance, and it becomes a bit like a common cold or other similar transient infections. And that means that the virus can stick around in the human population, not causing death. That's very good for the virus. It means it continues to multiply. And our anticipation is that this new coronavirus that we first met at the beginning of 2020 will, over time, become a perfectly calm virus that does not cause major illness, perhaps leads to occasionally a few people unfortunately getting severely ill, but otherwise it will be a little bit like the common cold. And that's where we think this virus eventually is headed. Mm-hmm. But it's not there yet, Claire. And that's why we're saying to everybody, you know, it will be really difficult the next few weeks because there will be surges, and in some places they will lead to a lot of unpleasantness, hospitals overwhelmed, health workers really, really up against the wall. And so please let everybody recognize that in this turning point, which is where I think we are just coming into, it won't be plain sailing.
And do you expect when those difficult situations arise that they will happen in unvaccinated populations or populations that have low vaccination rates?
Well, certainly where there are people with no immunity or little immunity to the virus, the consequences are likely to be much worse. So that'll be either places where there's not been much infection because they haven't encountered the virus yet, and that's in many parts of the world, actually. Or secondly, people who have decided that they don't want to be vaccinated or they have not been able to access vaccination, and they will get more ill. And I think that's pretty well now evident from all over the world that those who've not been infected and those who've not been vaccinated seem to get a much worse experience with COVID.
And people who have said similar to what you're saying this morning, they often have a proviso in there. They say, you know, we may see another variant. But you have said that a more lethal variant is unlikely to become dominant. Why?
So viruses become dominant when they are more easily transmissible between people. And then the more transmissible virus replaces the original one, and it happens quite naturally. It's what we do, in fact, call natural selection. And at the moment, we seem to have a less serious virus that is much more easily transmitted. That's the Omicron variant, gradually replacing the earlier variants, certainly in Western Europe and increasingly all over the world. Now, if another variant is going to come in and replace Omicron, firstly, it will need to be more easily transmissible than Omicron. Now, will a more easily transmissible variant also be more lethal? Well, most of the people to whom I have spoken are saying that's really unlikely to happen. So if we get more lethal variants, we expect them to be less transmissible and in the end unlikely to displace Omicron as the dominant variety. That's a bit complex, Claire, but I hope that listeners can get it, and I'd be very happy to go on about it perhaps in a later program at more length.
Okay, I think I understand where you're coming from, and I'm wondering as I'm listening to you talking whether we need an Omicron-specific vaccine or indeed fourth doses as they're doing in Israel, for example.
Well, the colleagues in the WHO are saying that if really we want to be using vaccine as the primary method of helping populations to stay safe in the face of Omicron, we really ought to be developing a vaccine that is specially adapted to Omicron, because simply just giving people more and more boosters of the existing vaccines is a bit inefficient. It really does use up vaccine. And one of the things that that does is decrease the amount of vaccine available for poorer nations, who are often getting donations from rich countries of almost expired vaccine. And we'd say, actually, don't use up all the vaccine that's available with more and more boosters. If necessary, just develop one that's a bit more suited to Omicron.
We have a lot of boosters in this country, and we're told over the last few days that both the Sunday Times and the Irish Times reporting that hundreds of thousands of booster vaccines are going to go out of date within the next 2 weeks. What should happen to those booster doses? Is there any way that they can be used elsewhere at this point with the clock ticking?
No, and it's really impossible to redeploy vaccines with 2 weeks' notice. Honestly, we'll end up with real difficulty with using them. I mean, you do get vaccines expiring in these kind of campaigns, particularly some of the vaccines that are being used in Europe. They are what we call messenger RNA vaccines. They have to be kept super cold. They're jolly difficult to handle. People, I know it's disturbing when you hear of vaccines expiring, but it's almost inevitable in the current circumstances. But let's not assume that you can redeploy vaccines that have only 2 weeks left. And we recently saw from UNICEF that they're finding it hard to cope with vaccines that have got 2 months left. They really need a good long time, at least 6 months, if they're going to be useful, especially in poorer places.
Okay. And then on the Omicron-specific vaccine, have you any sense of when that's coming?
I read what others are reading, which is usually material that comes from the manufacturers, and they're telling us either 100 days or something like that, 3 to 4 months, in order to really get the production going. I'm afraid I'm, like others, sort of stuck with that information. But I want to make one point, and that is that my friends at the World Health Organization, once any new adapted vaccine is developed, will still require rigorous testing procedures before they give an emergency use license for the adapted vaccine. And that's important. We really always have to check for efficacy and safety.
And I wonder, those who've had three doses of the vaccine, so the two original doses and the booster shot, will they need this adapted vaccine?
I cannot say. Do you know why I can't? Because there's just so little information about for how long you are protected after you've had three doses of one of the existing vaccines against Omicron, and when does that protection fall? And I don't have that information. I don't think anybody has that information yet. So it's too early to say whether or not those who've had three doses of the original vaccines will indeed need an additional dose of the Omicron specific. I don't want to get myself into a situation where I make statements about this sort of thing when I really don't have the answer. Okay. Sorry for that.
All right, that's fair enough. There's a lot of talk here about exiting the pandemic, making a plan and making it quickly, if some had their way, to you know, release all of the restrictions that are still in place. But there are others who say we need an emergency plan where we can revert to aggressive suppression measures if needed. What's your advice on all of that?
Well, I think you can probably guess that I'm going to be for route two, which is having capacity to deal with a nasty surge if needed. Because I keep saying to myself, you know, I know virtually nothing about this virus. It's so new and it's just mutated to produce this totally extraordinary variant, Omicron, which is changing the whole view of the thing. And that only happened mid-December. So my general point to everybody is simply, you know, hope for the best, but expect all sorts of challenging difficulties. And that means having plans for some degree of restriction on movements, probably local, if we get a bad surge and suddenly health services get overwhelmed and people start to perish. And that's the way I want everybody to do it. Plan ahead for things to be going good, plan ahead for things to be going bad, but there's no point in making your plans based just on hope. You have to make your plans based on what we've learned about this virus, and that is it's really cunning and difficult to deal with.
And is the time right now to loosen restrictions? I'm sure you know here that hospitality is still closed at 8 p.m. every day. Do you think that it would be safe now to loosen that restriction?
It's all about balancing risk. And that's why, at the moment, the health people are going to be looking so carefully at what's happening in hospitals. Are hospitals actually not filling up? Are intensive care units managing to release beds and not have them full of people with bad pneumonia because of COVID? And if that's the case, then, of course, that leads to a change in the thinking, and that will lead to some loosening of restrictions, and in particular hospitality. But it's not a good idea to go into the loosening of restrictions because a sector is in difficulty, in this case hospitality. Much better to make the judgment based on an understanding of the health risks and an understanding of the risks associated with the restrictions, and then weighing them up. And then doing it in as cold and dispassionate a way as possible, even though I know there are people who are saying, come on, come on, come on, we've got to loosen up. We've got an industry that's in real trouble. Well, I'm going to say, stick with what you've done so well in Ireland, which is working through these what we call trade-offs and trying to say, given what we know, which is the best direction to go for the people of Ireland?
But the belief is that Omicron has peaked here now and ICU has not been overwhelmed. The ICU numbers have been stable over the last number of weeks into months. So perhaps the time is right now to loosen those restrictions.
Two things. One, certainly, the need for restrictions to be reassessed constantly. This is not something that one wants to hold in place forever. So the first thing is, and I'm sure it's happening, is keep reviewing the data. Number two, just remember that what we're seeing at the moment is an aggregation. If this is hiding the fact that there is a cluster or a series of clusters building up in some part of the country, let's make sure we pick it up. So what I'm going to say is, be ready if necessary, if you find a surge coming, to reintroduce restrictions. Don't ever tell people that we're stopping the restrictions and that's it, we're never going to go back again.
Because you might have to.
You might have to.
We've changed some of the rules as well around self-isolation, and 7 days now, we're told, is a long enough period for positive COVID cases to isolate for. Are you happy that that's safe and reasonable?
Well, again, there's no 100% safe approach on this. It's all the time trying to make a balance of judgment. So, yes, it's necessary to think seriously about reducing the period of isolation. Why? Because it seems that Omicron is less lethal than the previous versions of the virus. And secondly, actually, there's an absolute necessity to avoid having too many people absent at the same time. What happens? You end up not being able to run trains or buses or supermarkets or whatever. So we've got to find some way to rebalance things. And the first suggestion has been in various countries to reduce the isolation period for positive cases. Some have said reduce it to 7 days. Some have said reduce it to 5 days. There are also various questions about what testing should be put in place for people to come out of it. Whatever way you choose to do it, it is a calculated risk. And we're saying we think we can reduce the likelihood of people being infectious enough with the 5 or 7 days for us to keep things going. And I think that that's a sensible way to go. But at the same time, be ready to go back again if it looks as though you got it wrong.
And David, just finally, so much discussion here in the last week or so about masks, the kind of masks we need to wear, especially because close contacts don't have to isolate anymore. What kind of mask do you wear now?
Well, first of all, I do wear what we call a surgical mask. If we were visual, I would show it. It's the thing that you wear when you go, that your dentist wears or your hygienist wears when you go. Yeah, the blue one. I wear a blue one. And it's got 3-ply and it's well made. And the thing that's really important is that there is a metal bit over your nose and you can pinch it tight, and that much reduces the amount of air that comes out the side. Now, some people say, well, what about an ordinary cloth mask? And the feeling among my colleagues is that's just not good enough. Some people say, do you need to go further than the surgical mask and actually use something called an FP2 mask, which is a specially created mask that really does reduce it? And we're saying actually health workers should use their rather more sophisticated mask. And as long as there's enough for health workers, then perhaps they also have to go to people who have got high risk. So, yes, the suggestions on masking are beginning to tighten up a bit. And the World Health Organization on their website have just got some new guidance, which I think is very helpful.
OK, so a surgical mask, I think, at the very least, is what you're advising us.
Yeah.
David, thank you so much. Great to talk to you again. Dr. David Nabarro there from the World Health Organization.